Philippe Petit has been performing stunts and tricks up in the air and on the ground for most of his life. He's a juggler, street performer, magician, the author of 10 books, and the artist in residence at the Cathedral of the Church of St. John the Divine in Manhattan. But he remains best known for his illegal high-wire walk between the World Trade Center towers in 1974. In his latest book, Mr. Petit gives us a peek into the thoughts and insights that keep him striving for larger and more spectacular stunts. It's called Creativity, The Perfect Crime, published by Riverhead Books, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Philippe Petit back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This book reads almost like a collage. It has digressions and asides, and you include some of your drawings. Have you been doing those sorts of things throughout your career?
My life is a collage. I'm proud of that, I guess.
Did you ever go to college? No.
I really turned my back from classical education. I embraced the school of life.
Well, do you do these things? Do you discover your insights into your creativity as part of the process, or only later, once you have some time to write and reflect on what you've been doing?
No, I actually don't reflect much on it. I live through it, and this book is a cavalcade, a gallop through a tumultuous life. I don't teach anything to the reader. I share my experience as a self-made man, if I may say so.
Well, you've said that you hate books on creativity, and you've decided to make one of your own.
Well, it's because most books, I must say, on the subject are a dissertation on the subject rather than sharing experience. I mean, it's nice for an author to mention great creators, but isn't that more interesting to follow a creator in his or her path, you know? And that's what my book is about.
Well, you've suggested that you're kind of self-educated. You were kicked out of 5 schools as a child.
I'm proud of that because I was a bad kid, but because I was a young artist following his passion, and I was practicing under my desk magic tricks. So of course, I was expelled.
So, but you weren't just punished?
Well, my punishment was to embrace a free life. What a great punishment that was.
So you were happy that you were expelled?
Absolutely. And again, the irony, my life is made of contradiction, is after the refusal of formal education, I embrace a life as a vagabond, as a, you know, minstrel traveling all the time. And then I was voracious to learn. I stole knowledge as much as I could.
Before we get to how you did that, how did your parents react when you were expelled from school?
Well, they never understood that I wanted to become a poet in midair, a wandering minstrel, and they wanted me to be, you know, have a serious upbringing and a profession like a lawyer, a doctor, a military person.
But also, if you leave school, it means that it's hard to maintain friendships. You were on your own, weren't you?
No. I created a lot of friendships with a lot of artists as a young developing artist. And actually, that inspired my creativity very much from a younger age.
Well, most of the people who have skills of your sort grow up in circus families or families where there is some other kind of a show business connection. But were you one of those kids who ran away to join the circus?
No, almost the opposite. I mean, I feel myself lucky to have not been born in the circus, because if I would have been, I would have become a regular wire walker like the one you see there that, you know, emphasized the stunt and the daredevilry and carry all those traditions. I mean, I love circus, but at the same time, for me, wire walking should be an art, should be something that enrich and inspire people, not frighten them. So my inspiration, since I learned by myself, was the opera, the literature, the art, the music, films.
So you taught yourself how to juggle?
Absolutely.
To walk magic, a tightrope?
Magic, juggling, and high wire in that order from 6, 14, and 17 years old were my main apprenticeship. And still today, I spend 3 hours a day on the wire, and I practice and I learn.
Well, how do you learn it? Somebody has to show you. There are no books that say, no. Here's how to juggle.
Well, now they are. They are even cassettes, I imagine, or, you know, videos. But no, the beauty at the time is not only those schools didn't exist, but if they were, I would have never go there, because I wanted to learn by myself. I wanted the hard way. I wanted the victory, the conquest of every day. And yes, it's almost impossible. And also, I didn't have any guides. I didn't have anything to compare myself with. with. So it was good in a way, because then it was easier for me to break the rules if I didn't know those rules exist.
So did you have teachers or mentors?
No. I refused. I had people who wanted to teach me. I said, no, teach me the rigging. Teach me how to attach the wire, because I want to save my life and to protect my life. But don't teach me how to walk on the wire.
So you're self-taught, which means do you do it your own way, or do you do it the same as somebody who wouldn't have been self-taught?
No, I do it very differently than all the wire workers in the world. Actually, my preference, and I spend a lifetime doing that, is to present walks. And if you go to the circus, you'll never see a wire worker walking. You'll see them doing dangerous pyramids and somersaults. But actually,
and almost falling, although it's all set up.
Yes, exactly. Faking falls. Exactly. So no, me, my sense of poetry and theater took me on the opposite side of this. And I am, I'm not really a wire worker. I'm a writer in the sky.
Well, this all does require a certain amount of discipline. So you may have been undisciplined in school, but disciplined when you were teaching yourself how to do this?
Extremely disciplined. And at the same time, my life is a festival of contradiction, because with that enormous disciplines come also a sense of mischievousness and breaking the rules and the daydreaming and playfulness.
Do you find that training for one skill helps you with the others?
Yes, and actually that's how my young life as an artist developed. The magic, by learning magic by myself, in many books they mention juggling. They say juggling is good for a magician to develop coordination and suppleness of the fingers. So I learned juggling. Now in juggling book they say go to the circus and you can juggle on a wire, the high wire. So you see, it was I never thought of choosing something in my life. It's always came to me almost dropped by the gods,
Well, many artists who write about their creative processes mention the importance of routine. Do you have daily routines?
Yes, and I have as many rules exception to those rules. So I share that with the reader in my book, not in a form of exercise, but in a form of opening doors to things that maybe you have forgotten that you are inclined to do. It could start with the way I will hold myself at breakfast in the morning. I make a point of, like a little kid, the mother says, hey, sit up straight. So I actually sit very straight at breakfast. And it's funny how it's going to influence my body language for the day. And if your body is alive and erect and ready to play, well, you are going to go forward in the right direction. You are going to be full of energy. So I love those little childlike, it's not really childish, but childlike secrets, as I call them. Because I discovered them, and they were helping me in my creativity.
Well, all of these things require a lot of practice. So do you ever let your practice go slack for a little while, or do you have to keep on doing it every day?
No, that's the difficulty. Practicing means exploring a world that you're not completely controlling, and it's a dangerous thing to repeat the same movement for 3 hours. So I have to repeat it with being my own theatrical director, my own critic, so it's not like a robotic move. To me, any of those things are an adventure in a way.
My guest is Philippe Petit, who's performed on the high wire more than 80 times around the world. He also practices the arts of magic, street juggling, drawing, and carpentry. And he has, this is your 10th book?
Yes, I'm proud of that.
He's written 10 books. This one is called Creativity, The Perfect Crime. Why is creativity a crime?
Well, for me, if you create fully, you have to start first with being free, with not taking the road that everybody takes, not thinking in a conventional way. So thus the rebellion against those rules. And if you push that a little bit more as a metaphor, you'll have the word criminal, artistic criminal, coming very soon to you.
So artists have to be criminals on some level? Obviously not the kind of criminality that gets you thrown in jail.
Well, I was thrown
in
jail.
Well, in your case, you've been thrown in jail.
For street juggling and for illegally high wire walking. But you see, the difference between a bank robbery and me doing a walk is on the former you steal and you deprive, and on the other you offer and you give and you inspire.
What's your take on those three people who skydived off the Freedom Tower in September Was that an expression of their creativity, or was that a criminal act?
Well, that's a question for them. You know, for me, I'm not that impressed by certain human achievements because they are just that, achievements. What interests me is to see the human soul attached to human achievements. So that's why the Guinness Book of Records is a book that I am totally uninterested in. To achieve is not enough for the human being. You have to inspire.
Well, when you say that, then what was the walk across the World Trade Towers all about? Huh? Wasn't that just simply a that was an incredible feat, but I don't see it as a work of art.
Well, it's because maybe you were not there to witness it, but everybody who was there...
I've seen the film.
Ah, okay. Well, the film doesn't do justice to the moment in time. But anyway, it's not for me to say what I do, is it art or not. But I do things in such a different way than, let's say, the wire workers in the circus, that people tell me after a show that I inspire them, I change their life, I make them believe in the impossible. And if this is not one of the definition of art, then what is?
You engage in high-risk performances.
Never. I never risk my life, and I will never risk my life. When I cross a busy avenue in New York, I look left and right.
What lessons could someone who works in an office learn from this book, which has a picture of you walking on a high wire?
Well, actually, there is a little secret I share about if you work in an office. Surprise yourself. Surprise others. Come to work one morning, take your shoes and socks off. First, nobody will notice, because people, you know, don't notice things. Secondly, you will create a new sensitivity that you didn't have. You will open one of your senses, a sense of touch. And anyway, it's a good creative little challenge to surprise yourself. Now, that's what I will start with.
Well, I do walk around my house without my shoes and socks on. They're pretty much the first things that come off, and then I have to hope that nobody's broken a glass or something else. But that's a whole other matter. Why do you call your computer a necessary evil tool?
Because it's a machine that seems to me, but you know, I'm living the 18th century. It's a machine that seems to me to impose its language to me. It doesn't have a button for daydreaming. It doesn't have a maybe button.
It does have an escape button.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, good answer. Except when you escape, then, you know, everything becomes blank and it's an eraser. But anyway, I don't have a cell phone. I am an imbecile living in the 21st century. And I should learn how to use those machines, but I feel they invade my creativity instead of serving it.
So you wrote this book all longhand?
Yes, with a sepia fountain pen, first pencil on paper, then the ink, and then at some point, I must confess, I put my words on the computer so I could change paragraph at the touch of a button. But that's come at the latest step for me.
But you wouldn't want to write on a computer.
And you
don't like cell phones? What's wrong with cell phones?
Well, then I don't know. They seem to force you to answer, to put a password. It doesn't seem that they serve me the way I wanted to be served. Plus, I don't want somebody to know where I am at every moment of the day or have to answer immediately. And I don't know. It's very nice to ask somebody where is the nearest train station than to press the button that will show you with a completely unhuman voice, make a left at the second tree top.
On the other hand, if you're late for an appointment, it's very good to have a cell phone, be able to say, I'll be there in 3 minutes. How long did you plan your World Trade Center walk? Did that take a lot of planning?
Well, yes, and actually a lot of daydreaming and a lot of gathering information. So it started actually 6.5 years before my first step that I drew the line on a photograph, not a photograph of the towers that didn't exist, but a photograph of a model of the towers.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that they were going to be built at some point.
Exactly.
Now there is no... Are there any buildings like that anymore?
Well, there are some magnificent buildings and
twin
towers in the
world. But I mean, where you could
walk
between, there are
twin towers?
Yes,
of course, there are many twin towers. But these, of course, to me, were unique. You know, I saw them grow and I married them with a wire.
Well, since it took years, there must have been times when things weren't working out in your mind and you thought you might not do it.
Not only in my mind, but a few times in a tangible way. I give you two examples. The very first time I saw the towers, first time I arrived in New York, I rushed to the towers. The Plaza was still under construction, but I sneak in and I touch the face of one of the tower, I don't even recall which one, and I look up and I knew my dream was an impossibility. And the second one was at some point I sneak and disguise myself as a construction worker, and I was caught by the police on the roof of the North Tower, and they take my passport and my ID, and they said never come near those towers again. So in those two instances, my dream exploded in negativity instantly.
Well, why that first response? You touched the building and you said this is impossible?
Well, it's not only touch. I touch and I look up.
Oh,
and
it
I,
was because I, you it, saw it was so high?
Oh, it was impossible to even for my mind to realize that this wall was a human-made wall. It was like a alien, landing strip for extraterrestrial vessel.
But then there must have been a time when, after you kept on going, when you realized there was no turning back.
Yes, and also those moments of impossibility and fiasco and defeat were, in some way in my life, they are the whip that I welcome as forcing me to make my dream come true.
Well, you knew that it was an illegal act. Was that on your mind when you stepped out on the wire?
Well, yes, and no pun intended, really. I was trespassing. I was invading the clouds' territory, the birds' territory. I had a very interesting dialogue with a seagull as I was laying down on the wire. I cannot tell what we talked about. It's a secret, but those moments...
That could have been really dangerous if the bird had decided you were invading its territory.
Well, I thought the bird was, and I was very afraid, like in Greek mythology, there will come hundreds of birds, you know, and attacking and eating my liver, you know.
Alfred Hitchcock could have made that movie.
Yes.
Well, but since you've made that illegal walk, and you made some others, you've been invited to perform many tightrope walks for the public. Are they different because... They are legal?
They are different and they are the same. They are different, of course, because it's much nicer to be able to invite an audience, come Tuesday at 9 p.m. and I will do something that will inspire you, rather than surprising a city and be thrown in jail. And they are the same because each time I grab the balancing pole, I am not, and you know that by now, I am not risking my life. I am doing a very noble action, that of carrying my life across. And I find out that that is the ultimate inspiration for my audience.
You also give lectures and workshops to students. Does it feel strange to be in front of a classroom when you were kicked out of five schools as a child?
Well, yes, but you see, I have a, I don't know, an enthusiasm that people catch immediately. And I love to teach, which is ironic, of course, and I love to learn. So when I face, let's say, a student in a lecture situation, it's a very natural exchange. I learn a lot when I teach, you know.
And we won't go into some of the other things you're doing. We did talk about the last time you were on our show about being the artist in residence at the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine here in New York City. There's also the film that many people will remember, Man on Wire, or Man on Wire. And now, Philippe Petit's latest book is called Creativity, The Perfect Crime. It is published by Riverhead. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.